This should not be this hard. Oh my goodness. Just stop talking.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm Brady Leonard.
I'm Josiah Hughes. Don't tell our guests, but I'm watching football right now while we're recording this. Jags are playing the Browns. Yeah, I talk a lot of shit about Bortles. I really want Bortles to succeed. It's not that I don't like Bortles. I just want him to do better. But at least it's not freaking Deshaun Kizer that plays for us, man. This guy, the Browns make the Jags look awesome.
Deshaun Kizer's from my hometown of Toledo, Ohio, by the way, and I would like to see him do well, but he's really making Blake Bortles look like John Elway right now. It's not good. Oh, man. So this week, we had Ben Howe on the show. He's a good dude. Ben's a good dude. He's a editor over at redstate.com. He's a filmmaker. He's an author. All around good guy, talented guy, and it was a good conversation. It was a good interview.
Yeah. What's that YouTube video you sent of him to me?
Oh,
Brady?
That was hilarious. Yeah. Just a side note. Yeah, go to YouTube and check out his video of from CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, I believe is what that stands for, last year. I think the video is called The Most Important Interview from CPAC 2016, and it's just Ben doing work. It's pretty hilarious. Definitely check that out.
Yeah, I'll pull it. Yeah, it's called the most important CPAC video ever is the name of the video on YouTube. That'll give you an idea of his personality is pretty great.
Good dude, funny dude, very knowledgeable. We had a great chat. I think you guys will enjoy it. So without further ado, here's our chat with Ben Howe. All right, guys, we're here with Ben Howe. Ben, thanks for making the time to join us today, my friend.
Absolutely, no problem.
So I got a question for you. Did you sexually assault anyone earlier today before the podcast? I feel like I have to ask these days.
You know, not only do you have to ask, but according to some people, it's really like a mark of a true gentleman if you go a full day without doing that. I mean, I saw somebody actually compliment Donald Trump for not having any sexual assault allegations, which I thought was a really interesting compliment. I go through most days without sexually assaulting anyone, so I guess I deserve a trophy.
Yeah, I usually ask people, like, when I'm at a restaurant, you know, I ask them just to make sure, like, you know, hey, before you bring my food, have you assaulted anyone today?
That's right, yeah, you got to make sure.
I don't understand this, man. Why all at once?
Well, all the allegations coming out at once? I think... And you know, I'm just guessing, but I think that it's just sort of a domino effect, like a steamroll where, you know, we're all guys and I've known how guys talk and how they think.
Right.
And I think that for a long time, I just kind of assumed each individual circumstance was its own little pocket of the universe all happening on its own. And I wasn't really thinking of it as like a widespread problem. Like maybe I just happened to somehow come across a lot of scumbags in my life. But I never really thought of it as something that is as pervasive as this appears to be. Mm. I guess, you know, people in power, I guess this has been just sort of a part of their culture.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have just had it. And unfortunately, that means a lot of people that I may have admired at one time are going to come out as something else. Because, like, for instance, Louis C.K. is one of my favorite comedians. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. When Louis C.K.'s apology came out and all the accusations came out, and I went back and listened to some of his routines, and I was like, wow, he wasn't really hiding this, was he?
Right.
I
mean, he's kind of upfront about, hey, I'm kind of a gross guy.
One of his routines was literally about how he thought the first thing a woman should see on a date is a penis. I mean, like, that's literally one of his routines. And it just made me realize, like, these guys are just disconnected.
Yeah.
They've got wealth and power and fame and everything, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not making excuses for it. There's no excuse for it.
Right.
But... it's interesting to watch happen. And I think that as different people come forward, different other people get the desire to come forward. And I think it's going to swing too far in the other direction. And now, you know, you're going to get a report about how, you know, Tom Hanks one time winked at someone. And now that's going to be a sexual assault allegation. And I think it'll go too far eventually. But I guess it's good. You know, get it all out in the open.
That's true. I mean, I guess there is a point. There could be a point to where, you know, there's just the confusion aspect of, okay, so you're saying there's the confusion of, okay, because, okay, I think Louis C.K. even maybe, or a few comedians have said stuff like this. It's like, if a girl likes you, something is good. And if she doesn't like you, it's assault, right? Occasionally.
Right.
So we're going to get to that line where it's going to be, well, what's really going on here?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of these guys that have been accused, I'm trying to be delicate, but I don't see any reason to be.
Right. You don't have to be on the show.
I see a lot of these guys and I'm just like, wow, you're just not a very attractive man, are you?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I almost wonder, like, do they just not get it? Because to me, you know, you start out, I don't know, holding hands or something like that, you know, something simple to try to earn the trust of the person you're with before you declare that you'd like to show them your penis. I mean, yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, perhaps some of these guys just, they got into a position of power and they thought they'd never had much luck with women and they just didn't really understand how to do it. And,
yeah, maybe. Power does.
It's sad.
Power. It's weird how the connection between power and all this sort of stuff goes. It seems to be strangely connected.
Oh yeah, with Louis C.K., my brother, who's a comedian, he was like, I forgot that everybody didn't already know that. he was like, yeah, we've all known this for. I forgot that this isn't public knowledge, but, you know, and Josiah and I are both professional musicians that spend a lot of time on tour and stuff. And we were talking before we hit record. We're like, yeah, just wait until this stuff hits the rock and roll industry.
I think there's no sexual assault stuff going on in the music industry. I mean, the last thing the music industry is known for is rampant sex. So I'm sure there's nothing to be concerned. I mean, just imagine when the Motley Crue and Poison stories start coming out, or the 80s glam rock bands, like they were crazy, or a lot of the you know, bling rap and stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole culture around certain types of music that glorifies exactly what everybody's calling out right now.
Yeah, I know some people personally who I've toured with that, let's just say they don't check IDs.
Right.
I've heard you know,
I heard R. Kelly doesn't check IDs, but
R. Kelly's got a few more issues past that. I mean, a lot of urine involved for some reason.
Exactly.
There's really been something I'm into, but, you know, I guess to each their own. Let's jump into a little bit of the news of the week. Democrats were really happy about the Roy Moore stuff last week. And, just a side note for the listeners. When me and Josiah recorded last week's episode, that was before a lot more of the Roy Moore stuff had come out. So our position was kind of like, we don't know if he did it or not. Yeah, homeboy did it. Roy Moore is not a good guy. No. So I think we recorded last Sunday. A lot of the new allegations came out on Monday. So we weren't as informed as we are now on that stuff last week. We weren't defending him by any means, but I just wanted to get that out there. But the Democrats, you know, they probably shouldn't have celebrated too quickly because it was bound to hit their camp as well.
Oh yeah,
namely Senator Al Franken. Let's talk a little bit about old Al Franken.
Well, you know, one of the things about situations like this is that people, it seems like they immediately move towards trying to establish degrees of depravity in order to give one guy a pass if they really want to give them another person with a hypocrite. So then that way they can say, look, they're both guilty, but this one is clearly more wrong.
Yeah.
Therefore, I can be fine with Franken and not with Moore. But the problem is that that's not how this whole thing has been set up. And I've never once tweeted in any type of sincerity the phrase, believe all women. And the reason is not because I don't think we should believe women. It's because I think that that kind of absolutism when it comes to this sort of thing is just going to get you in trouble.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened to the Democrats. When they come out and they say, believe all women, well, then you have to believe this woman. I mean, you just said, believe all women, and then they immediately started hedging. So I think their good news it's not quite as good as it used to be. But at the same time, I would say the Democrats did a little bit better of a job, at least the ones that I've seen. They've done a little bit better of a job of believing the allegations and saying, if they're true, that something should be done, than a lot of the Republicans did in regards to Moore. And, you know, my position on Moore, when it was early on even, most of my arguments, which are well documented, are that it wasn't so much to me about declaring whether or not he did or did not do those things. It was, I believe that these allegations are troublingly credible enough that people should be cautious about their support.
Yeah.
And then most of my arguments ended up being with people who had already decided they were false and or were essentially arguing that it wasn't that big of a deal. So I felt like even if Roy Moore came out, like let's say some rock solid evidence came out that he just didn't do any of this, none of it. Okay, that's horrible. He got falsely accused. He got dragged through the mud. But it doesn't change one thing, which is you had people in Alabama saying that even if it did happen, it wasn't a big deal. And so that's a problem to me, that people were trying to find a way to sort of diminish the accusations, not the truth or falsehood of them, but just the idea of having done it. When I was in my 30s, I dated some young chicks too. Not 14.
Right. Yeah.
Not 14.
No,
not
14. I've known people who have that sort of streak in them, and you can't imagine having someone like that in a position of power. That's awful. That would be awful.
Is there anything to be said?
I think he's going to win, so.
Damn.
Yeah, is there anything to be said having the viewpoint of Governor Kay Ivey, who basically said she believes the women accusing Roy Moore, but she still is encouraging people to vote for Roy Moore because he's not a Democrat, because he is pro-life and will vote for tax cuts and this and that. I don't understand, but is there any validity to having that viewpoint, at the very least being consistent?
I think it depends on, so, you know, I believe in God and I believe in the God of the Bible. And so as a result, I don't have to determine my own morality. My morality has already been established for me. And so I can look to the Bible, to the Word of God, I can pray, things like that, in order to determine, not for myself, but rather by using his instincts, what is bad and what is good. And part of believing that, which let's just assume for a second, I don't know for sure if that governor does, but let's just assume for a second that governor is themselves a Christian.
Sure.
There is no ends justify the means Bible verse in the entire Bible. I mean, there's nothing that would ever give you the out of, sure, we're using this depraved person, but it's to achieve something good. That just doesn't exist. So no, I mean,
the Bible is all about the means.
It's a good reasoning.
Yeah. The means are literally everything. That's the point of Scripture, because God determines the ends.
So
what you do or don't do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these people are basically saying is, I believe in God, but I don't trust him. Because if what you're saying is, I believe in God that he's going to do the right thing, but at the same time, I've got to do this in order to achieve his ends. Well, no, he never said that you needed to do anything of the sort. You needed to trust that even when you're making a difficult choice, like I've had to make in the past, even in politics I've had to make, sorry about all the noise out there, a difficult choice that you might have to make, even when it seems like the easier way would be another way, you do the hard way because you trust that he's got the best outcome in mind. And that's not what they're doing.
You trust that things are going to work out if you do the right thing.
Personally, I think that Senator Franken should be forced to step down. And I think if Roy Moore is elected, which you can give me your prediction on if you think he will beat Doug Jones or not. But I think if he is elected, I think Mitch McConnell and the Senate should, I think it's a 2/3 vote, right? They need 67 votes to expel a sitting senator. And I think they should do it. I think Franken should be gone. I think Moore, if elected, should be gone. I try to be pretty consistent on this stuff. Is that where you're at as well, as that would be the morally correct thing to do?
I would say, yeah, I do think that's the morally correct thing to do. And you know, for somebody like Franken, you know, where somebody could say, look, okay, this was a mistake and it happened a long time in his past and he admitted it and so on and so forth. He didn't really, though. I mean, you know, if somebody came forward right now with footage of me from 20 years ago and I was being some kind of ridiculous asshat and I didn't even know, what was happening in the photo because I was too drunk to remember it.
Just real quick, sorry to interrupt, but Senator Franken was 55 years old at the time. This was 2006 that he was on. For our listeners, that
I had to go back 20 years for myself because I think it's probably been that long since a picture could possibly. Because I even mentioned it on Twitter. I said I hope nobody had a camera at Mardi Gras 2002 in New Orleans. I might be in trouble. But you know, when somebody sees. You know, I purposefully make mention of my past fairly often, you know, about things I did that were stupid when I was younger. I dropped out of high school. I did drugs as a teenager. And like, I was a horrible kid. And if anybody ever came forward and said, hey, I've got this picture of you, I'd be like, well, yeah, that's called the era of scumbag, which I've already talked about and begged for forgiveness for. I think that's very different than somebody presenting me with something and then me sort of only tacitly admitting it even happened,
right?
While still scolding other people about their,
right?
It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, it's getting out in front of it, and we'll in a few minutes we'll give an example of when getting out in front of it goes horribly wrong.
I think I know what you're talking about.
That's my favorite thing in politics right now. But can I just bring up one point, and not to get all like tough guy on the audience right now, but I think we talked about this a few weeks ago with the Harvey Weinstein stuff. Where have the men been throughout all of this? I mean, and let me backtrack a little bit. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen the report that something like $15 million has been paid out to silence victims of sexual assault committed by members of Congress, something like that. So clearly heads are going to continue to roll, and it seems like this has been a pretty serious problem with our elected officials. But why haven't any of these men been getting knocked out? You know, like, where are the boyfriends or husbands of, or fathers in Roy Moore's case? You know, people say toxic masculinity is a problem leading to sexual assault. I think we need a little bit more toxic masculinity. I don't know, man.
I think there's been a lot of, at least in my personal experience, I have witnessed lots of intervention on the part of men. But what's interesting is that 90%, I'm just throwing that number out, 90% of what I've seen has been intervention when it's a stranger. So I've rarely seen a woman getting harassed or pushed around in public and not seen a man or a couple of men step in to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
The issue is, as I've seen it, is holding your friends accountable. And that seems to, not only holding your friends accountable, but holding your colleagues accountable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And another issue, I think, is, and this is a big one, I think men tend to look at things through the lens of what would bother them.
Yeah.
You know, so if I woke up, and this isn't to diminish at all what happened to this woman, I'm just talking about the difference between men and women. If I woke up and found out that some woman had been fondling me, I'd be like, what? Like, I wouldn't care. I understand that it affects the psyche of a woman differently, because certainly I would never have felt that I was in a position of powerlessness around this woman. And she might have felt in a position of powerlessness around these men. Mm-hmm. But I think that men, and this is wrong, they tend to look at it and they think, what's the big deal? Because it wouldn't be a big deal to them.
Yeah.
And so then when they hear about their friend, and then their friend gives his, oh, no, this is all that happened. You know, they want to give them the benefit of the doubt because they care about their buddy, or they just think, oh, he's not a bad person or whatever. And so they look past it. Where it starts to get really, and so like for that, I get it, and that needs to change, but I at least get where guys are coming from. Where it's been really bad, and I would not say I have personally experienced this, is where there's somebody who is like straight up a predator, and he's one of your colleagues, or he's somebody in a position that's higher than you, and that no guy stepped in. Where was Ben Affleck if he knew that this was a problem? Like, all these guys seemed to know this was a problem, and none of them felt that they were in a position to do anything about it. Career is only so much of an excuse here, in my opinion. It goes back to what we just said about the governor, you know, where sometimes doing the right thing is difficult, but you don't do the wrong thing because you're scared of that. You just have to go forward, just hope everything will be okay. And I promise you, if some guy had stepped up to the plate on Harvey Weinstein 10 years ago and had been blacklisted for the following 10 years, he would be quite popular right now. As the person who had done that. So, you know, they should have done themselves a favor and just stepped in when it was right to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, and not even just my wife, but any woman in my life that I care about, any friend or family member that were being, you know, some Harvey Weinstein style harassed, who I wouldn't immediately. I mean, they'd feel these hands, brother. They better hope. I mean, I'd go Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson all over their face, man. Well, I don't know. Like, that's just how I live my life. But
it makes me wonder, though. It would be nice if there was some laws that protected that sort of thing, though, right? Because, I mean, the thing is, if you hear something, you hear somebody's messing with your wife and it's not provable, and you go beat somebody's ass in the Walmart parking lot, mm-hmm. You're the one that's going to jail.
I don't know, man. We both spent a lot of time in Alabama, Josiah. I don't think many judges in Alabama in the 1970s would side with a child molester over the guy that knocked his ass out.
That's true. No, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're true. That's true. And, I feel like right now, though.
A lot of times when people know, like, a quick story. When I was in Arizona, my ex-wife and I were both there. We were married at the time. And we were at like sort of this blog thing. There were a lot of people there, and there was this guy who came in. He was really drunk, and he was really uncomfortably pushy and talking to women in ways that didn't make any of us comfortable. And we kept, I think every guy's been in this situation where all the guys keep saying, we're going to do something, and all the girls keep saying, no, just ignore him.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, that just kept happening. And then we were all sort of over at this one part, like standing up against the wall at the bar, and he comes by and he puts his hand on my wife's leg and walks past her, and I start to go towards him. She stops me and says, it's not worth it. But then I guess in the few seconds that passed after that, she got pissed off herself. And so when he passed us again, she poured a beer bottle on his head, and then I threw him into the bar. But what was interesting was, even as I was doing that, and any guy who has been in a situation like this knows this, even as you start to beat the crap out of the other person, in the back of your head, you're thinking, I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Right.
But while I got pulled off, the bartender immediately knew the guy's name and told him to get out. And while I was appreciative of it, it did make me think, you know, he's like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you letting other people be essentially in danger?
Right.
For what? Like, you know exactly how he is. Clearly, you knew who he was. They told me right after it happened, when I didn't get in any trouble at all for essentially attacking him, they basically said, yeah, he's known for that. And I'm like, well, then don't let him in your bar.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. People need to step up in that sense a lot, all over the board.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. And they needed to for years, obviously, with these people in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back as far as the...
I really don't think Senator Franken's going to be the last head to roll in terms of our elected officials.
Nope.
It's going to be lit, as the kids say, moving forward. I have a feeling. Before we move on from the sexual assault topic, I do want to read the best Facebook post I've seen in a long time. Like you said, Ben, you know, it's great that you are forthcoming about your past, and getting out in front of stuff is typically the smart thing to do. But like Dave Chappelle said, you know, keeping it real can go wrong. also, on a side note, Republicans are going to control the governor's mansion in Ohio, my state, forever and ever, apparently. This guy was Bill O'Neill, who's an Ohio Supreme Court justice and was probably going to get the Democratic nomination for governor next year. He's not anymore. So apparently, it doesn't sound like he did anything illegal, but he wanted to, you know, quote, get out in front of any possible scandal that his opponents could slap him with in this campaign. So he took upon himself to write this Facebook post. I just want to read it because it is just tremendous. Believe me, it's tremendous. Okay, this is quote from Bill O'Neill's Facebook post. Now that the dogs of war are calling for the head of Senator Al Franken, I believe it's time to speak up on behalf of all heterosexual males. I don't really get that part. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, continuing. As a candidate for governor, let me save my opponents some research time. In the last 50 years, I was sexually intimate with approximately 50 very attractive females. It ranged from a gorgeous blonde who was my first true love. We made passionate love in the hayloft of her parents' barn, and then ended with a drop-dead gorgeous redhead from Cleveland.
Is this guy married?
I don't know. Now we can get back to discussing legalizing marijuana and opening the state hospital network to combat the opioid crisis. I'm so, and he's with like five O's, I'm so disappointed by this national feeding frenzy about sexual indiscretions decades ago. Peace. Unquote.
God.
So that guy's career is, all right, I get what he was trying to do, get out in front of this, but he just sounds like an asshole bragging about the women he's had sex with. This is the worst political move I've ever seen.
Well, it was also. Did you guys see the affront to important commas that he missed?
Oh yeah.
Because at one point he was trying to say the secretary. I made love to the secretary of this particular congressman.
Oh, that's right. Taft. Yeah.
And it made it sound like he was making love to the congressman.
Yeah. It's just tremendous. The only way this could be worse for him politically is if he ended it with a video message that said, "And we're going to Columbus." Yeah. Just pull the full Howard Dean.
Yeah.
Bring it home, man.
He was trying to get out in front of grammar, in front of sexual assault, and he just committed grammar assault. And it was really like, it was the funniest thing I've ever seen written as a preemptive defense against being targeted, because he put a target on his own back. Not to mention, he sounds like a douchebag.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know if he's married or not, but when you're, he's clearly over 50.
And yeah, he's when in you're over 60s, 50.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you're still referring to somebody from years ago as my first true love, like, did he write that down in his Hello Kitty diary, too? I mean, like, it just sounds so lame. You know, the first true love, and then a drop-dead gorgeous elf. So he really just wanted to, like, show everybody his scoreboard, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he was thinking, maybe it was, like, along the lines of, remember in the presidential campaign, the primaries last year, when the Cruz campaign posted a picture of Melania Trump when she was, you know, half naked at a photo shoot or whatever, and as kind of like trying to make it like a negative thing against the president, which everybody's like, well, I don't know, man. He's like old and ugly, and he pulled that, so that's kind of like a plus, you know. It's just not a good move by Ted Cruz, but maybe he was thinking that, like, oh, I should just brag. But yeah, this was a big douche move. I really don't know where he was going with this.
This is a perfect example of the Trump effect, which is people trying to communicate directly with audiences without, because there's no way that went through like his team of advisors.
Right.
You know, he just woke up one morning and was like, you know what I'm going to do? And then just did it. And, you know, it's funny because you'd think these guys would have learned by now by watching how many people have burned themselves by posting first and thinking later to go ahead and show someone what you're going to say. I mean, I'm not even a politician. And every once in a while, before I tweet something pretty outlandish, I say, hey, am I going to get crucified for saying this? You're like, you know, seek counsel for Pete's sake. But no. there is also at least a chance, in my opinion, that somebody said something to him first. Like, I know what you did at X time, or I know you did blank, and right. He was trying to get out in front of it. He just still did it in a completely ridiculous way.
Moronic way.
But it wasn't like, it, at least from what his post said, it's not like he did anything illegal or anything. Like, he wasn't being accused of anything. He's just like, just out of
it. I know, and it was literally like he posted, I know lots of people are getting in trouble for sexual assault. I've banged a lot of women, man. That's all I got to say. I'll talk to y'all later. Like, what kind of a defense is that?
Ben, like you said, with the Trump effect too, I think, I don't know if a lot of these politicians understand that the only person that can get away with a lot of the stuff that Trump says is Trump.
Oh, I mean, that's absolutely true.
No one else.
He's designed his whole character over decades to be known for doing exactly what he does.
Right.
So then every time he does it, the same people who were disgusted with him before are still disgusted with him, and the same people who thought it was great before still think it's great. Yeah. So he doesn't win or lose any audiences.
Yeah, I mean, there's dozens of instances on the campaign trail of Trump saying something that would have sank literally any candidate of either party. I mean, anyone. I'm like, if George Bush or Bob Dole, like, imagine Bob Dole in the 96 campaign, you know, being caught on a hot mic saying, you know, grab him by the pussy. And that'd be it.
Yeah.
Man. Like, it's not like,
I mean, I use Viagra for a reason or thing. And something way lighter, something that wouldn't even wonder on the Trump scale. I mean, Trump can basically say whatever he wants, and his fans and supporters, and I'm not talking about like Republicans who have decided that they can live with Trump, or Republicans who say, whatever, I don't care as long as he does X, Y, and Z. I'm talking about the people who come out every time he speaks to say it's, you know, direct from God. Those people will support no matter what he says.
Yeah.
And as long as those people exist, they're primarily who we're all going to be arguing with, because Trump doesn't give a crap. He's just going to keep saying it.
Right.
Nobody can control the guy. Like, nobody can control the guy. And it's one of the reasons that I was always against him, was people thought you could control him. And it doesn't seem like having somebody with the amount of power associated with being the president, it doesn't seem like it's a good idea to have somebody like that that's that impulsive and that, I don't know what word to use, that childish. And that's how I've always felt about him. I understand why a lot of people support him in terms of how they think he's going to accomplish parts of their agenda, but it was just always a bridge too far for me.
Yeah, and for me, I did vote for Trump reluctantly. It was, you know, I it was definitely the toughest vote I've cast in a long time. You know, if I were in West Virginia or Texas or California or New York, where, you know, my vote didn't matter, I would have voted third party or left the top of the ticket blank. But I really did see Hillary Clinton as an existential threat, and that's why I,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I went home and immediately took a shower and try to, you know, get it out of my mind. But I did pull a lever for President Trump. But yeah, I definitely see what you mean. Let's move on from sexual assault. I'm glad also, Ben, how we opened the show, that you have not sexually assaulted anybody today. That
not so far, no.
Yeah, not so far. I mean, it might accidentally happen. You might just, you know, accidentally grab someone by the pussy.
Well, there's this gorgeous bombshell redhead right here.
In, from Cleveland, apparently.
Right.
So let's talk about the situation that the current tax bill is in right now. The House passed its version of the tax reform bill, and we want to we'll play a clip real quick. And this was fantastic. I am an Ohioan, so seeing Sherrod Brown, my leftist, idiotic, class warfare oriented senator, getting smacked around is just music to my ears anytime it happens. But in a Senate committee meeting on taxes this week, Sherrod Brown, Democrat senator from Ohio, spouted off the usual Democratic Party lies that, you know, Republicans only care about the rich, this and that. And Orrin Hatch, senator from Utah, president pro tempore of the Senate, absolutely smacked him around. And before we play the clip, Ben, me and Josiah have both said on this podcast a few times that, I mean, this tax bill is not perfect. It's not even that great at all. I take issue with a lot of it, but I still hope it passes. In my estimation, it actually would really help the middle class quite a bit. I mean, just doubling the standard deduction alone helps, you know, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of Americans. Before we play the clip of Sherrod Brown and Orrin Hatch, what do you think about the current bill that passed the House last week?
Oh, well, you know, it's interesting. I don't get to talk about policy that much anymore, because these days, when I look at the policy situations, my concern, and it remains even with this, my concerns are what's going to happen beyond the next few years. And so, Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch, I can look at tax reform, I can look at Trump immigration executive order overturn executive order. And I can say individually, yes, I think all of those things, I like all of those things. I agree with all of those things. My concern is that I don't feel like there are enough other simultaneous things happening that are going to keep those things from coming back to bite us, that they're worth it. So with tax reform as the example, I want tax reform and I want lower taxes. My ideal world is a world where we bring in enough taxes to pay for a budget that we can afford and that we all agree on, and then that's it. But when you have the ability to run deficits and you have the ability to run, you know, an unlimited debt ceiling, there is no such thing as starving the beast. As much as we want of actions as it relates to the deficits are going to get larger. And when they do get larger, it's going to cause a Democrat to win, and then they're going to get an office and run on how we have to raise taxes. And so without some spending cuts, I just worry that we get this short-term benefit, which is a benefit that I do support, of lower taxes, and that have that ultimately lead to higher taxes later, and that's what I don't want. So yeah, I like it. I like it, but I find it to be diminishing returns in terms of the things that I like that this administration does.
Gotcha. We'll get to spending cuts here in a second. Josiah, let's play the clip, if the audience hasn't heard it, of the exchange between Sherrod Brown and Orrin Hatch. I want to get you guys' reactions from that.
All right, here we go.
This tax cut really is not for the middle class, it's for the rich. And that whole thing about higher wages, well, it's a good selling point. But we know companies don't just give away higher wages. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money now. They're sitting on a lot of profits now. I don't see wages going up. So just spare us the bank shots, spare us the sarcasm and the satire. And
I'm going to spare it, because I'm going to just say to you that I come from the poor people. And I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chair of the Public,
wait a minute, just I'm not through. I get kind of sick and tired of it. True, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest...
Regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer...
Regular order.
We do a tax...
Regular order.
Middle class...
Regular order.
And over and over again. How many times do we do this before we learn this?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. And let me just say something. If you didn't... If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too. And I think I've got a reputation of having worked together with...
Democrats. Let's start with Chip.
Not starting with Chip. I did it. I've done it for years. I've got more bills.
Start with Chip today.
I got more bills passed than everybody on this committee put together. And they've been passed for the benefit of people in this country. Now, all I can say is I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bullcrap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right. And it takes a lot to get me worked up like this.
I actually, I really like pissed off Orrin Hatch.
I like to see politicians get worked up.
What I love seeing is the death of some of these tropes, you know. I think when it comes to taxation and this concept of this helps the rich, it is like the most basic math fail there is.
Yeah.
You know, if one guy makes $1,000 and one guy makes $100 and they both get a 10% cut in their taxes, guess who got more money? You know, it's completely obvious. And then the other issue that I have with it, which I've always had, is that the idea that the government is the one that has the money and is giving it to us. It's the other way around. We're right. The ones who have the money. The government belongs to us. So the only money they have is money that we give them.
Mm.
And So that bothers me, too. And people on the left, you know, people who currently like me because I despise Trump, they're always shocked at when I say things like, you know, oh, I thought you were one of the good ones. And I'm like, well, if that's your definition of a good one, then right. No, I'm not one. But I don't know that it's ever going to go away. I think the right has their own tropes that they bust out as well. And it always goes back to the same things for me, which is until the left and the right... in whatever party that they currently identify with, until both sides stop assuming the motives of the other side in the worst possible terms, there's never going to be anything to talk about.
Yeah.
That has to get fixed. And that's why, you know, that's why it took so many sentences for me to say that I do like the bill, is because, and I don't mean to sound like a nihilist here, but nothing matters. Nothing we do matters right now. And as long as we are sort of destined to toss the things back and forth like political footballs, there won't be any meaningful direction or course change. The whole time that Republicans have and conservatives have won, and the whole time that the Democrats have won, no matter which era you're describing, the deficits stayed,
still
the debt got
the
larger,
direction.
The government grew. You know, it all continues on the same course. And I'm just no longer interested in marching in the streets to celebrate that somebody got into office that is going to marginally slow it down a little bit without changing course at all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where we are.
I think you're absolutely right. And people point to the Reagan tax cuts as you know, the gold standard for what we need to do. And but, you know, people don't really realize that, you know, the size and scope of the federal government did not decrease under Reagan. You really have to go back to the Calvin Coolidge presidency in the 20s. That was the last time that the federal government actually decreased in power. That's the last time that I think the budget was cut by like 200% or something like that under yeah. President Coolidge. So it really has been, you know, coming up on 100 years since the federal government has gotten smaller. But with this current tax bill, I do hope it passes because it would help out a lot of middle class people like me. Just doubling the standard deduction alone would be a big deal. The main objection to this bill from people on the right are that, you know, people in California, New Jersey, New York, states with really high state taxes would kind of get boned a little bit because they won't be able to deduct as much of that. And, you know, and the trade-off is doubling the standard deduction. My thought is me in Ohio and Josiah in Florida, like, it's not our problem that California and New York have outrageous tax laws. Like, why should we be punished because California is so messed up? You know what I mean? That's not my problem.
To argue otherwise is to argue in favor of being held prisoner by the system, because if we can't ever change anything because it's going to hurt someone, then nothing can ever change, because we've set the government up, we've set the entire system up to be so complex and convoluted that somebody, oh, I mean, for instance, if we if we dramatically changed the personal income taxes to such a degree that you could actually complete your taxes on your own on a postcard, on a return the size of a postcard, if we did that, the detrimental effects to the accounting industry would be enormous.
Right.
And when you talk about the accounting industry, you're talking about millions and millions of people, and then their secretaries and their people who work for them to help with the numbers that aren't CPAs. And then you've got their families and their friends, and just like, it goes all the way down the line. It's huge. But what's the alternative?
Right.
You don't do anything because it's going to hurt someone. Like, I don't want to get hurt by policies that could detrimentally affect me. But if I can look at the larger picture and say, well, this is benefiting me, but it's hurting future generations, really, and it's not going to get better,
right,
then I can personally be like, this sucks, but I'm not going to be mad at the people trying to change it. I'm going to be mad at the people who made it part of the system in the first place.
Right. Our system's getting too complex for sustainability.
Does this thing pass? Does it get through the Senate?
So when it comes to the last year of politics, I have found that, first of all, I get a lot of heat for blaming everything on Trump. And the reason that people think I blame everything on Trump is because I do. And when I look at why is everything so unpredictable right now? Why is it that even something as simple as does this bill pass become a I don't know? Is because he has such a habit of inserting himself into things in such a way, sometimes at the last minute, in ways that changes people's opinions or positions or yes votes to no votes. He's done this so often at this point that to try to predict it would be impossible. I would say if Trump does not speak for the next however long, then yeah, I think it could definitely pass. But because he exists, I'm not so positive.
Brutal.
Yeah, and yeah, I totally get that. I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about that, only because, like, you look at somebody like John McCain, and the usual suspects are already coming out saying, oh, we might not vote for this
right
bill. Susan Collins, mm-hmm, Murkowski up in Alaska, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker. But somebody like McCain, for instance, in Arizona, like, this tax bill would greatly benefit the citizens of Arizona.
Sure.
I mean, they're not a high state tax state. I mean, they're like, this is, people in Arizona are, you know, the people that this bill would benefit greatly. I feel like if he doesn't vote for it, it's specifically going to be because he doesn't like Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And that could be,
like, that's on McCain, man.
Yeah.
Well, like, as it is, I would say
represent. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say that in any situation where you're looking at sort of a hierarchy, I think it's fair to accept that you're going to have bad players that are following, but that the responsibility ultimately rests with the leader. And right, if somebody is not leading even the worst of his followers, I can't really go to the follower and say, you're the problem. The problem is he's not leading. And for me, if I were in Donald Trump's position and John McCain personally didn't like me to such a degree that he was willing to vote against things that were good for his state in order to spite me, I would probably be trying to figure out how to change that, because my primary goal is to get it passed. And if he's going to be a child about it, then I need to not be a child about it because I'm the leader. But instead, I think he releases himself from the responsibility of leadership, points to the bad players that aren't falling in line, and then gives them essentially more ammo to continue acting like children themselves.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said about that. I mean, what did Harry Truman have on his desk? You know, the buck stops here. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, the buck does stop with the president. You know, on the Democratic side too, like, and we're not going to get any Democrats, or very unlikely Democrats are going to vote for this. But like, you look at a guy like Joe Manchin in West Virginia. Like, this bill is built for West Virginia. Like, there might not be a state that benefits more from this than West Virginia. I mean, if you look at the income demographics in that state. Like, Joe Manchin is going to go to his constituents and say, yeah, I voted to screw you guys over because I don't like the Republicans. You know, so it's like, it's really sad, man, that
it's putting, a cultural
putting
game
taxes
too.
On I mean, the middle class has become political, you know?
I think that in a lot of ways, one of the dangers of the new way of doing politics is that if somebody's going to continually give you cultural ammo, then you can get away with almost anything by pointing to how awful they behave. And I think a lot of politicians know that they can vote against their own interests because they can paint a bad enough picture of the people that they're in the other party that people will believe them. And it was one of my biggest concerns going in was I don't want to lose the ability to persuade people towards my ideas because the people who are with me present themselves so awfully that I can no longer convince people that my ideas are not associated with being awful. And
right.
I think that that's happening a lot. I think a lot of these Democrats will get away with voting against their constituents' best interests, specifically because their opposition makes it so easy to hate them.
Right. Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough.
It is. And look, you got to keep in mind that, like, a guy like me for the last 2 years, and I was very, you know, I wrote for Red State. I was very partisan. I was very Republican. I was in the Tea Party, you know, all of that. And I just reached a point where I no longer believed that any of the things that we can do at the government level matter until the people who are voting those government officials in get a clue. And the people aren't going to get a clue by seeing the benefits of tax reform, because they can be convinced that clearly they can be convinced that even things that are good for them weren't good for them. So it really comes down to how are people doing the persuading? What are they saying? The way that it's currently going, the Republican Party, it's not persuasion. It's appealing to people who are already angry, perhaps, but it doesn't bring in new people, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's going to have diminishing returns over many elections to come.
Yeah, Ben, I sincerely hope you're wrong. You're wrong. But I think,
but
I think
you're right.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there could be a great awakening. I mean, we've seen it, I guess you could say we'd seen it with this sexual harassment stuff, you know, the sexual assault stuff. I mean, I think that people do reach a breaking point. And, you know, I get a lot of crap from people because I have, they say I'm nicer to liberals these days than I am to conservatives. And my answer is always, yeah, well, I'm not trying to convince the conservatives to believe conservative things. I'm trying to convince the liberals. So yeah, I am nicer to them and I'm harder on you, because if I'm not hard on you and you're out saying some of the things that I've seen, like for instance, in the Roy Moore situation, you're making my job harder. And I don't have to convince you that lower taxes is good. I don't have to convince you that lower regulation is good, but I do have to convince this liberal that it's not associated with racism and homophobia. And that's frankly, thanks to you, you know, the person who's telling me that I'm not hard enough on liberals. So it's all about that for me. It's all about ending tribal politics.
Conservatives know better.
Yeah, they should. Yet they toss around terms like conservative populism as though that's a good thing, when populism should really be the antithesis of conservatism.
Right. Exactly.
We should want a well-educated, high information populace, not one that falls prey to populist rhetoric.
Well, way to end the podcast on a real downer, man.
and one day the sun's going to explode and we're all going to die.
Exactly. This is pretty typical of a No Gimmicks podcast.
We always end on a low note. All right, so two more things before we let you go, Ben. One, you have a new book coming out in a few months, brother. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's called The Immoral Majority, just to bring things even to a...
Super uplifting. Super uplifting. Thank you.
It is essentially, you could take the conversation we had about that governor earlier and apply it to the motive for this book. The basic premise of it is we all, at least, I'm speaking specifically of Christians and evangelicals here, we have lost sight of the fact that as fallen people, we are moral failures, mm-hmm. and that our goal is to try not to, but that our destiny is to always fall short. And the evangelical right in this country, in my opinion, has started to latch onto this idea that they represent moral perfection, and they will do anything to achieve what they believe is the ultimate moral ending that they have determined is right, and that is up to and including embracing things that are immoral. So that's basically what the book is about, just the idea that we can't go deeper into the gutter in order to come to a greater outcome. And I think that that's what a lot of evangelicals have tricked themselves into believing. So right. I'm hoping to make my case, about how evangelical leadership has helped this to be a problem. And I'm hoping that, people read it with an open mind.
And Josiah, me and Josiah have both worked at churches, and I'm sure we've both seen examples of this throughout our careers.
Yeah, well, one of the most influential things that's ever been said to me, my dad was a pastor, and he's a professor at seminary now. And when I was at a young age, he said, I was telling him something that somebody had said about religion being bad or something like that. And I said, the number one reason that people don't like Christians. And I said, why? What? And he said, because Christians are jerks. And it's like, ever since he said that to me, because I was like, what are you talking about? He was trying to give me like a larger picture. He was like, people can be jerks. They can be self-interested jerks. They can be selfish. They can be, self-righteous and indignant when they don't deserve to be. And when you become a Christian, you're not supposed to believe that you are now free of those things. You're supposed to now understand that that's how you are and then work to be better as a result. But what a lot of Christians, I think, fool themselves into believing is that they have seen the light and now they have to get other people to see the light so they can be as good as them. And that's just not how it works, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So, and one last thing, Ben, we always end the podcast with something positive from each one of us. It can just be a random story, something going on in your life right now or something going on with your kids, or it can be a book that you're reading, a TV show that you're into, a new album that you like, a movie that you saw. As long as it's not political, we always try to end with something positive since we always bring it down. We bring it down hard at the end of every podcast. So what do you got going on in your life? It could be a story or it could be something media related, whatever that you've been into in the last week or so that the audience should check out.
I would say there is a 99.5% chance that the sun will not explode tomorrow.
That's incredible.
All right, I'll give you one positive. Go see Thor Ragnarok because it is hilarious. I saw it last Sunday. I'm a super huge comic book nerd and movie nerd, and I think that in terms of if you've watched all the Marvel movies, what's so good about this one is that they spent so much time developing all the different sides of all the characters that by the time they got to this one, they didn't have to really give us any more development anymore. They just let us have fun. So it's funny and it lives up to the hype and you should go see it.
Awesome.
Nice. Josiah, what do you got?
I ain't got much, but I've been thinking about Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking for that Turkey Day, as people start calling it in the United States. But I kind of take offense to that. I don't take offense to it, but I don't like that everyone calls it Turkey Day. It's still Thanksgiving, guys. The point of it is Thanksgiving. The point is not pre-Black Friday, right? So I would just encourage everybody, when you're eating that giant turkey and you're about to die from an exploding stomach, try to think, if you spend 15 seconds a day thinking about how incredible it is that, like Ben said, the sun hasn't exploded yet, and that everything, this incredible world we're living in, everything, how everything is working so perfectly all the time, I just marvel at the fact my car still runs. I'm like, this thing is running off of tiny explosions and it moves me forward all the time and never catches me on fire.
It's a miracle.
Despite the fact I do nothing to it besides put some oil in it and gasoline, which are both flammable liquids. So just try to spend some time being a little bit contemplating on how awesome this world is right now before you go and buy a bunch of stuff.
I'll piggyback off of that this week. I haven't talked about this on the podcast yet, but I had surgery a couple weeks ago. Let me preface this by saying I'm 28 years old. I'm in very good health. I work out. I'm in decent shape. I eat well, you know. But over the last couple of years, I've had these random tumors popping up all over my body. Just sorry to get weird on the audience right now. I'm very sorry. I had one on my neck and one on my rib cage removed a couple weeks ago and got all the tests back and I'm completely fine.
No cancer.
No cancer. No nothing. I'm completely 100% good to go. The doctor said these are just random. They're called lipomas. They're just these random cysts that can show up for any given reason. Could be hereditary, could be a million different reasons that science doesn't really know why they happen. But I was very worried about it. Definitely weighed heavy on my mind the last couple of years. But yeah, man, God is good. And I'm not dying of anything. So that's very fantastic. And I found that out a few days ago.
Yeah.
So that definitely brightened my week. So that's all I got, man. That was basically, that's all I got this week. I'm not dying of cancer.
Yes.
Thank God.
Thank God.
That's good.
Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you. Sorry to make it weird.
Explode and you're not dying from cancer.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry to make it weird right at the end, guys. But hey, man, pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
Ben, where can everybody find you on the old interwebs?
You can read my ridiculous tweets at Ben Howe. You can read me at redstate.com, and you can find me on, well, just type in my name on the first one that comes up. And then other than that, if you see me on the street, just don't say hi.
Don't say hi.
Leave me alone.
Leave the man alone, ladies and gentlemen. And Ben, we have to have you on soon when your book is closer to coming out. We definitely have to have you back, and you can hawk it a little bit. It'll be great. And thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast this week. Follow us on Twitter at NoGimmicksPod. Please subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play. Give us a 5-star rating and good review. We freaking love you guys, you filthy animals. We'll talk to you next week. No gimmicks.
No gimmicks.